Have you finished your personal statement yet? Now's the perfect time to get it professionally reviewed by a medical school HQ expert advisor. We have former directors of admissions, admissions officers, and the like on our small team of amazing people. They have the inside knowledge from reading thousands and thousands and thousands, tens, if not 100,000 personal statements going through the process and setting up the process for their whole committee. They know exactly what medical schools look for and the common red flags that can get your entire application thrown out. Take advantage of our flash sale right now, going through May 6th, up to 6,000 characters reviewed for just $150. That's a $75 discount on our regular price. Go to editmyps.com. Again, that's editmyps.com. The pre-med year, session number 520. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have a wonderful guest to talk about U.S. News and World Reports and what it means when medical schools start pulling out of participating in those rankings. Notice my words there, participating in the rankings. Are the rankings going away? What's going to happen? Today, we're talking to Dr. Brian Carmody, a pediatric nephrologist who also was on the show back in episode 475, talking about the future obstacles, potentially, that osteopathic medical schools, a unique obstacle that osteopathic medical schools may face in the future. He had a great YouTube video all about it. You can find him on the Twitter if you go follow at JB Carmody. That's C-A-R-O-M-D-Y. Again, that's J-B C-A-R-M-O-D-Y, JB Carmody. Go find him on Twitter. Let's go ahead and jump in and say hello. But before we do, I want to talk about the MCAT Minutes brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. If you have not created a free account over at Blueprint MCAT yet, what are you waiting for? Did you know that most students who take the MCAT have a free account over at BlueprintMCAT.com? The majority, almost all of the students taking the MCAT use Blueprint resources every year, year in, year out. Go get a free account. You get access to a half-length diagnostic, a free full-length, their spaced repetition flashcard platform, and most importantly, I think at least, their study planner tool, because you can't do well on the MCAT if you don't have a good plan. Use their free tool, again, BlueprintMCAT.com. Dr. Brian Carmody, thanks so much for joining me again here on the Pre-Med Years podcast. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. It's an honor as always.
I love talking to other opinionated people. Lord knows I have lots of opinions about things, and so do you. So I'm excited to talk about something that has been in the news recently, and that is the unparticipation, the removal of participation of medical schools, some medical schools, from the U.S. News and World Reports rankings. When I first saw law schools doing this, my first thought was, I wonder what med schools were going to do. Did you have an inkling? Like, were you like, oh yeah, med schools are next? Or were you like, nah, they're not going to do it?
I wasn't shocked. I mean, there's been a sort of a simmering resentment to the U.S. News and World Report rankings among, you know, some of the medical schools for a while. So, and I mean, even before now, I mean, like, you know, some of the medical schools had declined to participate in the rankings,
yep,
you know, for various reasons. So, so really it was just that the ones who were winning in the rankings decided to drop out, you know, this time.
Yeah. Why do you think there were rumblings? Was there this kind of miscontent, malcontent, whatever, of med schools? Like, oh, why are we doing this?
Well, I think it's because, I guess first you got to acknowledge that, I mean, the rankings do matter. I mean, they matter to applicants. They matter to the way that people perceive the school.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a high stakes competition, especially if your school is really particularly interested in the way that, the average guy on the street perceives the school.
Yeah.
So, The thing is, it's a, you know, it's an arms race. You know, you can't just rise to the top of the U.S. News World Report rankings just by, you know, by chance. I mean, you have to put in deliberate effort to make sure that your school is excelling on the metrics that are in their formula. And you have to continue to put in that effort year after year in order to maintain that position at the same time that other schools are doing that too. So, you know, it becomes a significant input for the school administration. And I think that ultimately the calculus was that it's an input they're putting in that didn't improve their output. Because if you're the schools, like the schools that left, and what do you have to, you know, if people already think you're the best school, what do you have to gain by participating in a competition that might convince some of them otherwise?
Yeah. So it's interesting, right? It's not like here in the US, we have medical schools that go without, right? There isn't a medical school out there that doesn't fill a class by 50%, right? We see some other professional level schools that are really struggling to fill their seats. Medical school is not the issue, right? There are plenty of applicants. Yeah. We have more applicants than we have seats for medical schools here in this country. You had mentioned, right, it matters. But then you had mentioned it matters to the applicants. It seems like to me that's really the only place that it mattered, is that someone could beat their chest and go, "Ooh, I got into a top 20."
Right. Right. I mean, the point you make is exactly right. I mean, it's not like the medical school is going to not fill its class. Yep. And it's not like they're going to not fill their class with high quality people. I mean, the next person who was on the waiting list or the next person who got rejected would have probably been indistinguishable yep. from the people who got a seat in the class.
Yeah. Have you ever looked at the U.S. News and World Report's methodology?
Oh, yeah, I have.
I'm sure you have. I'm sure you have. A lot of people don't. And they just assume like, oh, it must mean this spectacular thing. If a school is out there saying, hey, look, we're number two, number one, whatever on the U.S. News and World Reports. I broke down the methodology previously in other episodes. I have it open here. To me, it's nothing more than a popularity contest for a big chunk of it. It's like, hey, what do your peers think about your school? Hey, Yale, right. What do you think about Harvard? Oh, I love Harvard. They're wonderful. Okay, great. We'll rank right. them high.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, your listeners may be already familiar then if you've already gone on tirades about it. But yeah, I sometimes have to tell people the same things. I mean, it's, you know, even, I mean, as you know, I mean, a big portion of it is this survey data, you yeah. know, from administrators and, you know, program directors. But I mean, in reality, very few of those people have any realistic foundation upon which to judge the schools, you know. I mean, they don't know what's going on at the schools. They don't know what the educational, you know, sort of inputs or outputs are, except in the very broadest sense. And so, I mean, my honest opinion is that most of those people inform their voting on those things by the U.S. News and World Report rankings. So it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy yeah. of circular logic, you know, so.
Yeah. You posted something recently where I think it was another institution reached out to someone with gifts and other things to potentially sway their vote. What was the story behind that tweet?
Yeah. So I guess as foundation, one interesting thing about this whole exodus from the U.S. News World Report rankings for medical schools is that the same institutions that say we're no longer playing this game, the metrics are invalid, whatever, they have, many of them have enthusiastically reaffirmed their interest in participating in the U.S. News World Report hospital rankings.
Yeah.
And I think there it's because the economic incentives differ. You know, I mean, like you said, I mean, Harvard's going to have, you know, 100 medical students or however many spots they have. That's how many they're going to get. But their hospital, you know, I mean, if you swing a few transplant patients or expensive, you know, surgical procedures or oncology patients, if you're able to shift a few patients who need expensive care from whatever institution they were going to go to your institution because of the U.S. News World Report rankings, you can pay for whatever input advertising and, you know, marketing, whatever you have to do many times over, you know, because the scale of that kind of financial shift is significant. So, you know, for the hospital rankings, they have a similar expert opinion variable so that, you know, in my specialty, which is pediatric nephrology, it's not an especially large specialty. I mean, there's a few hundred pediatric nephrologists in clinical practice in the whole country. So when they're trying to make their hospital rankings, they send out a survey to pediatric nephrologists and ask, you know, what are the best centers in pediatric nephrology? Where would you send a complicated case or what are you going to send like that? And, you know, I think probably most of us from real experience probably have some sense of that, but you're allowed to think list, I think it's either 8 or maybe even 10 answers on the ballot. And so children's hospitals, for instance, fill up my mailbox with all kinds of crap. You know, I mean, like I got, you know, one thing I put on Twitter was I got these, you know, 280 page annual reports that were about this, you know, that this thick from a children's hospital. I got two of them, you know, and I don't think that any realistic person sitting in the marketing department thinks that I'm going to really read that 280 page tome about their children's hospital, but it's an attempt to put their name in my head. Because I got to lift that thing and I got to throw it in the trash can. And when it lands there, it's going to make this authoritative clunk, you know, and it conveys the prestige of the institution. You know, a different children's hospital was sending out, of all things, harmonicas. I mean, what, you know, but the thing is, it's a memorable gift. It's the same mindset that led drug reps to sort of, you know, put their pens in your pocket, you know, years ago. It puts your name in the head and, you know, of the voters. And then when you get the U.S. News and World Report survey, if you choose to fill it out, which of course only a minority of people do, you know, it's there and you might, you know, you receive this gift, you might sort of, in some subtle way or on the margins, you might be influenced by it. You know, they know what they're doing.
Yeah. My biggest concern historically with U.S. News and World Reports, looking at the methodology, looking at, as you mentioned, right, these administrators are taking the time to figure out how do I rank higher? What do I do? To me, all of that was working against the applicant and what is in their best interest, and ultimately had zero impact on education quality. Right? To me, there was only one variable in there that I remember. I just scanned through the list again, and that was like faculty to student ratio. It's like what can actually impact your education,
right?
And so it makes me mad actually that schools participate in this, because by participating in it, by wanting to rank higher, they are basically saying, I want to have higher MCAT scores so that I can rank higher. I want to have higher GPAs so that I can rank higher. Not because we have data that shows that higher MCAT scoring students do better for patient care or do better in our curriculum or whatever else. It's just so that we can have a higher rank on U.S. News and World Reports.
Yeah, right. I think the use of MCAT is especially pernicious. And like you probably already highlighted before, I mean, even if schools tried to sort of abstain from it and said, well, you know, we're looking for a certain kind of student. We're looking for an MCAT score that's above a certain threshold, and then we're looking at the person and stuff like that. Even if you did that, if your peer institutions continue to recruit students with higher MCAT scores, your ranking is going to go down, because whatever your MCAT score median is converted to a percentile scale mathematically that's used into the rankings. Yeah. So your ranking can drop even if your MCAT score stays the same, if, for instance, you know, your peer institutions were, you know, accepting people with higher MCAT scores, you know?
Yeah. Why doesn't the AAMC say, you know what, the MCAT scores at each of the institutions, that's private data. Other institutions can't see it. U.S. News and World Reports can't see it. It doesn't matter. Let's not publicize it.
I believe that data comes from the school. Does it come from AMC or does it come from the school?
I don't know. but the AAMC is the overriding organization. Yeah. Potentially, could they say, "Hey, schools, this is public information"? Because technically, it's the AAMC's information, right?
Yeah. I'm actually not sure on that point. My impression had been that was one of the data points that they collect from the schools, okay, you know, so that, you know, when the schools withdraw, they're saying they're no longer going to provide that. Because obviously a lot of the data that U.S. News and World Reports uses, they either generate themselves through these surveys, or it's already there publicly for the taking. They just assimilate it. So, you know, obviously, like many others have pointed out, I mean, the rankings are going to continue on whether schools choose to participate or not.
Yep.
It just, you know, the data that's used in the formula may shift or differ.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's a big point that we haven't really talked about is the rankings aren't going anywhere, right? They're a financial driver for U.S. News and World Reports. They'll figure out how to create rankings no matter what. I don't think there's anything wrong with rankings. Do you? Just at a core. Yeah.
No, I don't. I think that the problem is not necessarily with rankings, it's with the interpretation of rankings and with the metric chasing that rankings inspire.
Yeah. Yeah. The I forget the exact quote, but you may know it. Like every result from a system is like perfectly aligned with how the system was set up or whatever, right? And yeah, so if the goal is to have higher MCAT scores so that we can rank higher in the MCAT News and World Reports or whatever, then we're going to set up a system that does that. And I'm sorry about all of the lower MCAT scoring students. You can go to another school. We don't want you. And so that's my biggest thing is how do we figure out from a data standpoint, from a validated as much as possible standpoint where we're using data to drive the outcomes of admissions and not we want the highest MCAT score students regardless of rank, because there's probably some sort of secret society of admissions committee members that they have badges when they go to their meetings. Like our average is 520. What was yours?
I don't know.
There's very weak data out there on MCAT score in terms of predictability of board scores and clinicals and all of that fun stuff. A lot of the data comes from the AAMC, which I think we all have learned going through this process that if an organization behind the metrics is the one studying the metrics, you probably shouldn't look at them super reliably.
Yeah, right.
If you, Dr. Carmody, were in charge of setting up a brand new system for medical school admissions, what would you want to see?
Well, I think the first thing that you got to say is that, one of the fundamental flaws of U.S. News and World Report rankings is this sort of unspoken assumption that all schools are trying to do the exact same thing, when in reality, they're not. It may be that, what, let's say, Harvard and Johns Hopkins are trying to do are substantially very similar. That may be true, but the kind of doctor that, Uniformed Services is trying to train, their goals, very different. Yep. The goals that, for Howard or for, the medical school where I work, Eastern Virginia Medical School, our goals for our graduates are different. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if somebody got very interested in research and became the chair of some academic division, but that's not really why we're here. So I think the first thing that you got to recognize is that different schools have different missions. And the next thing that you have to look at is what are the admission variables that actually lead to the outputs that you want, So we've been doing that lately sort of with my residency program, the residency program where I work as an associate program director. I mean, one of the reasons that we exist, we want to train pediatricians who serve in the local area, who serve the kids around here. And maybe they get specialty training and come back. But I think we've actually done a pretty good job of that. I mean, a good number of our residents do that. And so we're sort of looking at, what are the things, how good were we at predicting that, on the front end? What are the things that people told us? And I think that that's a justifiable, mission-driven, admission process or recruitment process if you focus on those things.
Yeah.
And so, for medical schools, certainly I think... it does the school no good. It does the student no good if you don't accept students that are academically qualified. I mean, students need to be able to demonstrate in one way or another, whether through GPA or MCAT or whatever, that they have the, the academic horsepower to succeed in that environment because it's, it's tough, And then beyond that, really, I think schools should focus on, what is the reason this school exists? What are we here to do? Is our primary mission just to be a social climber and climb these ranking systems? Or are we actually here to provide something different to society at large?
Yeah. I was at a conference in 2019, I think. It was an admissions summit in Toronto, and it was deans and directors of medical schools and other health profession schools. And I was there as kind of the oddball to be the voice of the pre-med student and talk about where the struggles are for pre-med students and where medical schools can potentially try to improve this situation. And the biggest thing that I talked about was transparency. I said, there's just a lack of transparency in this process. And I'll never forget one of the directors of admissions at a school in the Northeast was like, well, we can't be transparent because we're all competing with for the same student. And it just, like, it goes what you were saying, right? Every school is doing something a little different. And to me, that took me, that meant to me, like, all you care about is stats. If you're fighting over the same student, all you care about are the 528 4.0 students so that you can work your way up the rankings. And that just, it hurts my feelings, right? It just hurts my feelings. I don't know how else to put that. I speak to too many students who have amazing stories, who are going to be amazing physicians, who I would love to be at my bedside if I'm in the hospital. And they're just not given a shot sometimes because their stats aren't there compared to what schools seem to want these days. Not necessarily what will allow them, as you mentioned, right? We need some baseline level of competency to get through this process. Yeah, we have to have that, no doubt. So I don't know. It's just, that's my biggest struggle with this process. And I'm thankful that some schools are withdrawing their participation from US News and World Reports so that we can hopefully get to a point where schools are like, where is a better place to measure outside of these variables, MCAT, GPA, and selectivity being the big three that I think ultimately hurt students more than help.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I think the same thing applies to residency selection. I mean, which is, I mean, you know, more of my area of expertise, I guess. But, you know, there's in one sense, I mean, I think there's a comfort in using hard metrics for applicants because it sort of gives you a blueprint of what you should achieve and leaves out the, you know, uncertainty. And I think that most residency applicants and most pre-meds, I mean, they want to know what they got to do. They're motivated, they're driven. They're like, tell me what I got to do and I'll do it. You know, like, what bar do I need to jump over and I'll do it. But I don't think that's the best way you get the most out of human beings, because human beings have different talents. And I wish we had a system that sort of was more able to recognize people who have God-given talents and want to demonstrate merit in other ways. And they take their talents and they go as far as they, you know, as they can with it. And demonstrate things that way. You know, I think that's how you get the most out of all applicants, is by letting people, you know, whatever you got, man, you take it as far as you can, you know, and show us what you can do.
Yeah. You've been talking a lot recently online about, and not a lot, it just, I've seen some tweets about step one going pass fail, how that's a competency, right? That's a licensing exam. I don't think it was ever meant to be scored as a quality metric. It's just like, do you have what we consider as a society the bare minimum to take care of our population? Do you ever see the MCAT going to some sort of pass fail system?
Yeah, that's a good question. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I would not be surprised if at least the scoring changed such that at the higher end there was less, you know, there was less numeric discrimination. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, like, you know, if you look at the predictive validity of the MCAT, if you look at the MCAT's ability to determine, you know, how likely are you to succeed in the first 2 years of medical school, which is, of course, what that test is intended to predict. You know, someone who has a 526 and a 520 probably don't have any difference in their outcomes, you know? And in fact, actually, I mean, the outcomes don't significantly drop until you get closer to the 500, you know, mark, if I remember correctly. Yep. And so, you know, but yet if we have systems like U.S. News and World Report that are giving you a percentile, well, then you have a strong incentive to take someone with, you know, a 518 rather than a 514, yeah. You know, a 520 rather than a 517, even though, I mean, those may actually, that numeric difference may not confer much more predictability because you're already at the flat of the curve for the outcomes you care about. So I would not be surprised actually if AMC, at some point did move to a way of reporting scores such that, you know, high scores were reported as greater than, you know, something or other.
Yeah.
Now, obviously they're running a business, you know, and so they wouldn't do that unless they had good belief that, you know, that the deans would be okay with that. You know, the admissions deans, you know, that's what they wanted and that would be useful to them. So I don't think it's going to be something that catches people by surprise.
Yeah. It's interesting. The thing that popped into my mind when you mentioned that is the way that Casper scores are actually recorded, and they're recorded as quartiles. You're either 0 to 25, 25 to 50, 50 to 75, or 75 to 100. And it's interesting that maybe MCAT scores should potentially be in very similar buckets, because we know, like, are you going to be a better doctor if you score a 528 versus a 515? Probably not, right? Yeah. And so it's I don't know. Yeah.
Well, they certainly could report scores in any way that they chose. I mean, they could report scores as, instead of reporting a number, they could simply report in accordance with the predictability of the test instrument. They could report the probability that your score, which they might keep to themselves, the probability that your score would result in, you know, successful completion of the first year of medical school on time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what my score is, but I know my probability is 98% or 96% or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah. Do you ever see a world where there's just so much data that we're gathering as a society with technology these days? Do you ever see a world where, whether it's for USMLE or COMLEX or all the way back to the MCAT or SAT, ACT, if that's still around in the future, where we can go, you know what, Dr. Carmody, we have 10 years of you as a practicing physician. We see what your patient satisfaction scores are, what your outcomes are, what your readmission rates are, whatever the data is for you as a practicing physician based on your specialty, and tie it all the way back to, oh, you got a very bad score in your MCAT. Now I can see why you're a terrible doctor, right? Do you think, like, because ultimately that's the ultimate question to me is, how are you going to be as a doctor, right? Again, obviously, we have to make sure you're going to get through medical school and pass the boards and all that fun stuff. But patient outcomes are the gold standard measurement. Do you see a world where we can figure out some correlations of all that
well,
stuff?
Well, I can tell you that there are entities that are interested in creating that kind of data. I mean, and I'll tell you, entities are generally entities that that offer some of the testing involved. So they're very interested in tying, you know, USMLE scores to patient outcomes or you know, or similar things. So it can be done. When it's done, it will have a very wide confidence interval on your estimate. And
what does that mean for someone who doesn't know what that means?
So you might be able to show an association between, you know, someone's USMLE score, let's say, and I don't know, their patient mortality rate for some condition in the hospital years later. But it doesn't mean that all the points on that estimate fall on a single line. You know, there may be actually quite a bit of spread such that it really negates the real interpretive value of the existence of a statistical difference.
Yeah.
And moreover, the other thing is it will always include confounding because, you know, it's not that these scores exist in a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, someone with higher SAT scores, I'll tell you, someone with higher SAT scores and lower SAT scores, they don't differ in just terms of their SAT score. They differ in whatever life experience led up to them taking the test.
Yep.
And then more importantly, for whatever you're trying to predict, the SAT score itself sets in motion other things that may impact the variable that you're interested in.
Yep.
Someone with a higher SAT score, well, they may get, you know, scholarship money. and they may have a more a greater ability to study for the MCAT because they're not working a work study job, let's say. You know, so and then they get a higher MCAT score. And then guess what? Now they, get into a better U.S. News and World Report medical school. And now they get into a better residency and they go to a better training hospital. And so now there's you've introduced all these other variables that have real impacts on the outcome that you're interested in measuring. And it's hard to say whether it was the SAT score or whether it was the fact that you went to a better medical school or went to a better residency training program where you had broader experience or whether it was in fact something collinear with the SAT score that from early life. So, you can make these mathematical models and depending on how sophisticated of a person is listening to you talk about it, they may buy it or they may not. If you're talking to me, I'm not probably not going to buy it. but some people probably will.
Yeah. Getting back to U.S. News and World Reports, all of the schools have not removed their participation from the rankings. What does that say about the schools that are still participating? What can a student think about that school?
Yeah. Well, I think that it for each of the schools that have removed themselves, they have made the decision that staying in the rankings was more expensive or more constraining than it was valuable to them. Mm-hmm. All the schools that have chosen to stay in have made the opposite decision. They have weighed the same data and they have come down on the other side of it saying, actually, we believe we'll get better applicants, more applicants. It'll ease our faculty recruiting. It'll improve our name recognition for the hospital rankings that we really care about. You know, whatever the side benefits of participating are, they're gonna, they've chosen to side on that side of it. So I think it's reasonable to expect that, like you said, U.S. News World Report's not going away. They're gonna continue to rank things. It's likely that they will, they'll have to reconfigure their methodology somewhat. Mm-hmm. It's likely they'll reconfigure it in a way that will punish the schools that have tried to that have withdrawn. Now, I don't think that this may sound cynical. I don't believe that they'll do that in a way that that would call into question the authority of their rankings. If you drop Johns Hopkins, or Stanford to number 50, well, now your rankings have lost some face validity. But I do think that they will configure their formulas to benefit the schools that have maintained submitting data. And so I think it's reasonable to assume that if your school is a school that was in the teens or the 20s, you might have a chance of rising a few spots. As other schools sort of slide a little bit. So I think that's part of the calculus too.
Who ultimately wins with this kind of reconfiguration of the U.S. News and World Report's rankings?
I think it depends where you sit. I think that the individual schools, whether they choose to stay or whether they choose to go, I think they view themselves as probably being winners, because they've made a decision that's right for them. I think for students, honestly, I don't think students win or lose. I think that, if you were a pre-med student who, for whatever reason, had been so socially isolated that you were just completely unaware of what schools people think are the best medical schools, yep. Well, then I imagine then the U.S. News & World Report rankings would provide a useful piece of knowledge to you. But otherwise, they sort of recreate the rankings that everybody already had in their head. And like I say, tend to, to perpetuate and reduplicate those, that same rank order list. So I don't think it probably changes much for medical education. I think that it does free up some admissions officers to be a little bit less metric driven, mm-hmm. and less in pursuit of metrics that have absolutely nothing to do with the quality of metric of education that's provided. A good example there is, it's a small piece of the rankings, but the rankings still include acceptance rate.
Yeah.
Think what perverse incentives that creates for schools to, drive up applications from people who are realistically not going to get into the school,
yeah.
just to keep, that doesn't help anybody. That just drives up costs and, it helps no one. So I hope that schools will feel a little bit less bound to some of the foolish metric chasing that these rankings inspired.
Who loses?
U.S. News World Report is floundering. with this, because you know, 30 years ago, U.S. News World Report was a journalistic, news reporting, business. Now it's a ranking reporting business.
Yeah.
And but the value of that business really depends on how much faith we all put in these rankings. Mm-hmm. And I think that, in a small but measurable way, I think this does diminish their stature. And I think that it will hurt their business, particularly if the contagion spreads from law schools now to medical schools, now to other schools or other things. It will, I think that it will continue to hurt their business.
Yeah. For the pre-med who goes on to Student Doctor Network, goes on to Reddit, and looks at and discusses, I want to go to a top 10, I want to go to a top 20, 99% of the time referring to U.S. News and World Report rankings. What do you say to that student to help them potentially see that that makes almost zero difference in the quality of their education and the opportunities they'll have as a physician?
Yeah. So I think you have to clarify, because I go through this with people with residencies too. What is it about the top 10 school or the top 10 program that that you want? And I think you got to be real honest, at least in your own head, with what that thing is. And for some people, I mean, to be frank, it's just the name. It's just the prestige. It's just, you want to be able to post it on Instagram or tell your friends or whatever,
yep.
Because it's sort of an instant CV. You may not be able to talk about your MCAT score with people that aren't close to you, but if you say, I got into such and such, well, people think they know what your MCAT score probably was, So it's sort of an instant CV, but in terms of your opportunity, it may not matter that much, it depends what your career goals are. If your goal is to be, an internist or emergency medicine doctor and actually treat patients, then, honestly, where you go to school is probably not going to matter very much. If, on the other hand, the only thing that makes you want to go into medicine is that you want to be the chair of otolaryngology at an Ivy League institution, well, buddy, you better start working on your CV now. And for you, yeah, you really should. You really should go to the most prestigious school that you can, because it's going to matter, and you're going to have to keep playing that social climbing game for the rest of your life. And and for some people, if that's what you want to do, have at it. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And I think for most physicians, it's not really what brings you joy. But I think you got to be honest with yourself. So I think it's good to start that early and have a realistic idea about what your career goals are and where they're going to be served. And for many things, the rankings are, like you said, they're probably not very relevant.
Is there anything else that we haven't talked about with U.S. News and World Report rankings that you think need to be mentioned?
Well, I think the thing to emphasize for pre-meds is that, which you probably have done, previously, is that there's really nothing in the rankings that really measures the educational inputs, that are going into your training. And that's something that you should consider. These days, most medical students, use or rely extensively on third-party resources, not so much the faculty, but your clinical rotations, the resources of the hospital, whether you're going to have to go to six different places or whether it's all in-house, whether you're going to have to schedule your own rotations, whether you have mentors in the field that you want to go into, all that's highly variable. And none of that's captured by U.S. News and World Report. But again, depending on your career goals, and depending on how, what you want out of medical school, those things may be highly relevant.
Yeah. That previous episode for people who want to go take a look is premedyears.com/432. And that's where I went down each of the different variables in the methodology and spoke my mind as I do. Well, Dr. Brian Carmody, the Sheriff of Sodium, people can find you at thesheriffofsodium.com or JB Carmody on Twitter, where you are crushing it with all of your followers. Thanks for coming on and sharing with our audience.
No, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, there you have it. Again, Dr. Brian Carmody. Find him on Twitter, JB Carmody on Twitter. He's a pediatric nephrologist, and he has lots of opinions like I do. So it was a great conversation about what this looks like, what this means for students, for schools, for institutions, all that good stuff. Hope you enjoyed our episode today. We'll talk to you next time here on The Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.